I'd like to start by reading you the passage that leads into our epistle lesson from this morning from James chapter 5. Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. But above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. How honest do you think we are? How honest would you say that we are as a society as a whole? What about us good Christians, even? Maybe it's not an easy thing to come to terms with. I mean, if there is a sin that we are all grossly guilty of, it's probably lying, right? Even the most faithful people I know have a tendency to stretch the truth at times. But it's okay. Lying isn't one of the big sins, right? And with a tip of the hat to the Pope's visit this week, we can put a Catholic spin on it and say that lying is mostly a venial sin and not a mortal sin. I mean, it's not murdering a guy. It's not robbing a bank. It's just a little lie. We all do it. We either flat out lie or we stretch the truth a little bit, maybe. Or at the very least, we twist our words and actions to just barely follow the letter of our oaths. There once was an old city miser who was on his deathbed, and at his last request, he asked to be alone with his lawyer, his doctor, and his priest, the three people he felt that he could trust. I know I'm going to die, he said to them, and I'd like to take my money with me, so I'm going to give you each an envelope of $150,000, and I want you to tuck it into the coffin with me before they shut the lid. And they each agreed to do as he asked. And it was a few days after the funeral when the priest, overflowing with guilt, finally confided to the other two that he had only put $100,000 in. I'm glad you brought it up, said the doctor, because I have also been feeling guilty. I only put $80,000 in. And hearing this, the lawyer was taken aback. You people should be ashamed of yourselves, stealing money like that. Am I the only honest person here? So the priest asked him, so you put all the money in the coffin? And the lawyer said, I am good to my word. And pulling out his checkbook, he showed them the carbon copy, saying, I tucked in a personal check for the full $150,000. Thank you for laughing at that. Nobody laughed last night. I kind of like that one. Lying seems to be one of those sins that we're all so quick to forgive and forget. Perhaps it's even worse than that. Half the time we see it as something that doesn't even need forgiving. It's that small and insignificant. But is it really? Is it such a small thing that we don't even need to think about it or really let it change our lives? Honestly, I'm not so sure how unimportant it is. Sometimes I get the feeling that our downplaying of the importance of our words is actually more detrimental to us than the importance that we put on staying away from those major sins. I mean, we make a big point of staying away from the big ones, right? We don't blaspheme God. We're not going to go murder a stranger today. We all know how devastating it would be if we cheated on our spouse. And we wouldn't steal $100,000. You know, these are the big ones. And we know that we have to avoid them. We take pride in avoiding them. But we kind of break them when we think about it. How long has it been since you said, oh my God, in just a casual way and took the Lord's name in vain? And I doubt anybody's going to go murder anybody today, at least I hope not. But chances are you will think a hurtful thing towards someone or say hurtful words about someone. And Jesus had a few things to say about how thinking or saying something against someone is just as much of a sin as actually doing it. And while I hope that nobody's marriage is going to be torn apart today by adultery, how many people will have lustful thoughts or steal an inappropriate glance at someone who is not their husband or wife? I believe Jesus' words here were, "But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." I have a feeling that if any one of you found a purse with $100,000 in it, you'd probably try to find the owner, right? And maybe it's just because you know $100,000, it's too good to be true, or you'd be afraid of what would happen if somebody finally did come looking for it. But what if you found 10 bucks in an envelope on the sidewalk? Would anybody even try to find the owner? I'll tell you a story. A few weeks ago, one of the church members brought me a $20 bill that they found in the parking lot. And they didn't feel comfortable keeping it, so they brought it to me. And you know what we did with it? We just kind of tucked it into the offering plate. We didn't put an announcement in the bulletin the next week. I didn't hold it up and say, "If anybody lost a $20 bill, please come talk to me." And I don't know, I don't know if that was really right or wrong. I mean, maybe the right thing to do would have been to hold it up, to try to find the owner. But there was this little voice in my head that just said, you're never going to find the owner of this. And even if they did say they were the owner, you couldn't prove it. Chances are that the owner didn't even realize that they lost it. Or what if two or three people came forward and said, "Yeah, I lost a 20 that day." All valid points, I guess, but do the objections justify the action, or are they just excusing it? I don't know. But I guess on a side note, if anybody lost a 20 a couple weeks ago, come talk to me. The point is, I guess, with any and all sins, we kind of try to wiggle our way out of responsibility. And I think that's most certainly in our nature. And it's especially prevalent with the sin of lying. We have this tendency to think that if we can twist our words so that we say one thing, but leave the path open to do something else, we've found a loophole, and we've really avoided doing anything wrong. The truth is, if you find yourself in even the general area of this conundrum, you've kind of already failed. In our epistle lesson for today, James is writing all about this. He gives us some very good advice when he says, "But above all, my brothers, do not swear, either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no." It's so simple, right? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't hide behind subtext or interpretation. It sounds so simple. It sounds like something that Jesus would have said, right? Well, in fact, he did. James is actually referring to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount here when Jesus preached, saying, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.' But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say simply be yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil." See, there was this problem back then where religious men and women believed that an oath made in God's name was absolutely binding. But an oath made on anything else was, distinctively less so. And this was common among the Jewish people, the leaders, the laity. They were very good at following the letter of the law and riding out these loopholes in it. But Jesus, over and over again, he seems to take issue with this. He hates it. He hates the double talk and the spin. So he gives us such good advice. Just be honest, right? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't swear by heaven or the moon or the gray hairs on your head. Don't swear by your mother's grave or your pinky finger, right? And the reason why he dissuades us from such oaths is because taking an oath like that implies that under certain circumstances you will be completely honest, but under other circumstances you won't. And that if your words are somehow bound to heaven or to earth, you promise to remain honest, But unless they pin you down to something greater than your own honor, you can't be trusted. Is that really what you want people to think of you? Is that the person who you want to be? I would suggest that as Christians, as people who model our lives after Christ, we must be honest in everything. Let no deceit be found in us. And it's a difficult thing to do, I know. We're really not used to it. If you strive for honesty in everything, it will be painful at times. It's hard. A husband and a wife are getting ready for an evening out, and the wife is standing in front of a full-length mirror, taking a hard look at herself. "You know, my dear," she says, "I look in the mirror and I see an old woman. My face is all wrinkled, and everything else is either sagging or bloated. My legs are fat, and my arms are all flabby." And she turns to her husband and she says, "Tell me something positive to make me feel better about myself." And he studies her hard for a moment, thinking about it, and says in a thoughtful voice, "Well, dear, it appears that there's nothing wrong with your eyesight." Services for the husband will be held Tuesday morning at Dalton's funeral home. Perhaps maybe there's a difference between being honest and being smart about what we choose to say, but Christ tells us that in what we say, we must not lie. We must be honest in our words and actions. Perhaps mom was always right. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. But always be true. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And if you can't, then remain silent. So my question for you today is does this describe you? Are you honest in everything you do? Do you always tell the truth without being questioned or being made to swear to it? And do you do so clearly, without wiggle room? If not, well, then let's strive for that. Let's try that this week. Every time you're confronted with the temptation to stretch the truth or to mislead, either stop and say nothing or be honest. It won't always be easy, but when you fail, Christ will forgive you. Jesus died on the cross to forgive us our sins, and that is not a lie. That is truth. But this week, strive to be honest men and women that Christ would have us to be. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And to that simple truth, I say amen. Now know that the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds.